Wake up! Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to You and Me at 30. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I realize that you could be anywhere in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I sincerely appreciate that. You and Me at 30 is a talk show bringing you lively, thought-provoking discussion on a variety of topics. Each show will feature an extended conversation with a guest. While many of these individuals will come from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and the local community, I will also feature several guests from around the country. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore.
We all know people who watch the news all day and then complain about what our politicians are not doing. Many of those who grumble never actually do anything to make things better. But then there are persons like this morning's guest who choose to run for office and create political change on their own terms. My guest is Charlay Childs. She's a native of Baltimore, Maryland. In 2018, she ran for a position on the State Central Committee in Baltimore County's 10th District. Charlay, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Hey, I'm excellent. So before we get started, as I said, you ran for a position in Baltimore County. However, just for our listeners, since most of them are here on the Eastern Shore, you do have a Eastern Shore connection. So can you tell us what that is?
Most of my family is from the Eastern Shore, from the Salisbury area, and that's where I grew up and spent most of my summers there, enjoying Ocean City and just the local areas.
So tell us, what is the State Central Committee and how does it shape Baltimore County politics?
Each party has its own central committee. So you have the Democratic Central Committee, you have the Republican Central Committee. And what the Central Committee does is that they basically provide support for the nominees in that party. So they do that by assisting with voter registration. They do fundraisers. They basically get the word out there for each candidate in the party. And then once a nominee is elected, then they promote that person as well, doing, you know, just making sure that they do door knocking. They do phone calls to people. So they have a state level and then they have a national level. So I was running for the state level, and it's voted upon by your district. So me being in District 10 of Maryland, only the people in District 10 could vote for me, and only the people in my party could vote for me. So it couldn't be, it's not a really an open election per se. So you get voted in by your population. So the District 10 had five open slots. Once you're voted for in your district, you serve with other people throughout the state to, like I said, to promote the party and get out there and make sure that the voices of the people are heard within your district for your party.
So Charlay, since you say that, you know, you're serving as a support system for the major candidates in the party, when you run for this particular position, do you have to have a platform of your own? When you're out there speaking?
You don't necessarily have to, because at the end of the day, you have no legislative power. Okay. We can't make any changes like in the Senate or in the House of Representatives. However, you are able to support somebody that you find in the party that you particularly want to work with, or that you see things in your district that need to be addressed. You can support that person. And then once the nominee is elected, then you support that person moving forward. But you do have influence as far as making sure that your district ideas and issues are heard to the people that are running. So that's an advantage of it, that you do say, hey, you know, I've been polling the community and this is what they feel needs to be addressed from our party.
What inspired you to run for office?
I wanted to get more involved in the community, what happens in your community. So I prayed about it. And once I was settled, it was outside of my comfort zone. But I said, you know what, it's more about being about it than, you know, just speaking about it. If I really want to get involved, this is something that I feel, you know, it won't hurt. So.
Was there like a moment, or was there like an issue that made you say, hey, I actually want to get involved. I want to reach out to these delegates. I want to go to a town hall meeting. Was there something that drove you towards that, or had you always been feeling that way?
Well, my mom, she was in civil rights when she was a teenager and in her young adulthood. So it kind of was always something we talked about, politics and things that were going on in the community. I just felt that there needs to be some type of push, because it seems like everyone's talking about what we need, but no one really wants to address it. It seems like it's just a regular, okay, we're just going to deal with this and not really be a part of the solution.
In your opinion, what are some of the major issues in Baltimore County that need to be addressed?
Some of the things that I saw through campaigning and just going to town hall meetings are quality of life for seniors. There are a lot of seniors that are living in poverty, a lot of seniors that don't feel safe in their neighborhoods. There are a lot of seniors that feel left out. So I think that their quality of life definitely needs to be addressed, because they have limited resources at that moment in time. Once you become a senior, most of them have limited resources. So we need to make sure that we take care of them, because they provided throughout their working years. Another thing that was big for me was the education system, as far as just lifestyle education, meaning filling out job applications, making sure you have a trade or something that can make you productive in the community, and feeling like you have the social skills as well as the resources as far as finding a job to be productive and be able to be self-sustaining. Those are the two major things that I think are very important.
Had you had any prior experience serving in any type of elected position?
Yeah, no, I never did. I volunteered for things that would put me in like a leadership position. Outside of that, no, I usually sit in the background, or I'm a supporter.
So this for you was really stepping out of your comfort zone.
Yes, it was. I'm a very private person.
Okay, so we're gonna come back to your experience running for office in just a few minutes. But you served in the military. What branch of the military were you in, and for how long did you serve?
I was in the United States Army, and I served for 4 years straight out of high school, and it was great. I'm glad that I did it. It was definitely a good fit for me at the time, and it helped in my future.
Did you get to travel at all during the military?
I did. I went to Darmstadt, Germany. That's where I was stationed. And from there, I was able to travel with Italy, Hungary. We got deployed to Bosnia. We went to Austria. I got to go to a lot of different places, which definitely broadens your horizon. I would suggest that if you have the opportunity to go to another country, it's very important to see how other people live and to understand different cultures and respect them, and then just know that there's people in different ways of living, different ways of life.
Do you think that experience in the military and also living abroad may have also have played a role in you wanting to be more politically active back here at home?
Absolutely. I think when you're exposed to more, you're more open and you're more understanding of different cultures. You're more appreciative of different cultures and open to diversity, and you can relate on different levels just because you have already been exposed to different things, and you can find the common ground. And that's how you solve issues, is by finding common ground. And I think that's definitely helpful when you're running for office or when you're just dealing in the community, period, whether you're an elected official or just an active civilian in life. It's always good to understand that everyone doesn't live the same life that you live, but when you come to common grounds and realize you have a lot of similarities and a lot of similar desires, it helps to resolve any issues if there are any.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to UMES 30. Today's guest is Charlotte Childs, a 2018 candidate for the State Central Committee in Baltimore County. Charlotte, let's go back to that whole process of campaigning. So we talked earlier about how you met with the delegates and you attended the town halls, and then they told you that you should run. But give us some more details in terms of that process and, you know, how long it lasted and, you know, even on election day, what, you know, what was actually happening prior to you receiving the results.
So you register with the Board of Elections and you go in, fill out the paperwork. And then from there, you have to actually give the name of your treasurer. You have to have a treasurer, someone that is not you, in order to be the treasurer of your campaign. You have to get a name for your campaign and also get a treasurer. So after you do that, you have the paperwork, you put that in there. And then from there, I feel that it's best to have to know someone that's already in an elected position that either you're running for or just in an elected position in general, just so that you can get an idea of different things that you can do in your campaign. You have to create promotional flyers and things of that nature, and all of those have to be accounted for by your treasurer with a monthly report that you have to do, and you have to submit that as well.
In terms of the funds, because I'm sure this wasn't a cheap venture for you. So is this all self-funded, or were you doing some type of fundraising campaigns? How did that happen?
So for the most part, provide, you know, it can be self-funded, but you can also receive money from people that you come in contact with, or just from other organizations. All of that has to be accounted for so that there is no conflict of interest. And like I said, it has to be documented by your treasurer. I did a lot of the funding strictly because I was new, and because I was new, I didn't really want to get involved in a whole lot of being sure where the money came from, like who is this person, and am I getting this? Is there going to be any backlash from me accepting money from this person? And then it comes out later, oh well, this person was involved in something else. That's another part of the campaign that was kind of just in my mind a key that I was trying to remember when going out there and promoting myself and being involved. But for the most part, I did most of my campaigning. I sponsored most of my campaign and provided most of the money. It was self-funded. I did receive a few dollars from family members. So they helped as well, and it was very appreciative. But from doing the campaign, I can understand when the president runs and they say, oh, they raised this amount of millions of dollars. I can see why it takes that much, because publishing things, getting your name in the paper, and it can add up. It can add up. If you want T-shirts for people who are handing out your flyers, that adds up. That has to be accounted for. So, yeah, you can spend just for the committee, and I wasn't even running for, you know, a legislative position. It costs a couple thousand dollars.
When we talked earlier prior to this interview, you told me some stories about, I guess, some personal connections you were able to make along the way campaigning with some of the people, you know, that you spoke to. Can you share one of those stories with the audience?
One lady that did meet at a town hall meeting, we were there talking, and she had discussed how she was a senior, and she was kind of fearful because her neighborhood had changed, where there were younger people moving in, and not just younger people, but people that were involved in some type of activity that wasn't good for the neighborhood. So she called her police. She called the police a couple of times, and apparently they found out that it was her, and they were making statements to her about, you know, she doesn't need to call the police, and you're just trying to scare her. And she stated that at the town hall that she was fearful. So from that, I spoke to her on the side, and it's just it was just saddening to hear. You know, she had bought this house. She lived in this house for over 30 years. It was paid for. And then to feel like she wasn't safe in her own home. So I worked with a local martial arts instructor, and we decided to hold a self-defense class open to, it was geared to senior citizens, but it was open to everyone. But definitely her, I wanted to make sure she and anyone else that felt that way were able to come there to at least empower them in that aspect, that they could feel like they could, you know, stand their ground. I didn't want them to go out there and start kicking tail or anything like that, but at least she felt empowered in some way that she could, you know, that she could go home and feel safe.
As a woman, did you ever feel that your male competitors enjoyed any type of gender privilege?
During my campaign, I really didn't. I really didn't. Even in certain fields that I saw, not necessarily mine, but certain fields that I saw, it was dominated by females, actually. The Board of Education, I believe, only had one male running. So I really didn't feel that way. On a central committee, it is gender balanced. So if there are more males versus females, they will elect within the committee, they will elect females into slots to balance it out, so it's always 50-50. So at least with the committee, there wasn't. I didn't see that at all.
So with the 2020 election approaching, what are some of the issues you want to see those presidential candidates address? Now that you've had a chance to get your feet wet a little bit in politics, what do you want to see the various Democratic candidates and then also Republican candidates addressing in their platforms?
You know, we have to protect our kids in school. There's no reason these school shootings have to stop. So I really would like to see a realistic and a research solution to gun violence, and especially in our schools, where they can address that and actually have a concrete solution to it, and one that's supported by not just Democrats or Republicans, but one that's inclusive. And I'm really hoping to see that. Also hoping to see more support for senior citizens. And I know they're talking about cutting Social Security. So I really want to see how they address the quality of life of senior citizens in the nation. In general, I want to see how they would unite the nation. Right now, it seems very, very divided. Our nation seems very divided, whether it's separated by race, by politics, by political party. I want to see how they can address building back up the nation, as well as building back up relationships with our allies. Because it, to me, appears to have turned into a very divisive nation.
Why is it important for people to not only register to vote, but then to actually pay attention to all of the candidates and not just solely focus on who's running for president every 4 years?
It's important to register, obviously, because, you know, you have no voice if you don't register to vote, because then you can't vote. But it's important to get to know the candidates, because in the gubernatorial election, you also have candidates that are running for the state level. So that's very important to you locally. So the president is not going to come to your house, but your local officials, your local delegates are in your area. They have to be. They have to live in your area. So they handle what's going on in your immediate neighborhood, your schools. What's it going to be built in your area, any kind of infrastructural problems in your local area to get local funding, all of that's covered by your local elected officials. So So if you don't vote in that, and then you're saying, oh, the school is trash, and you were a part of that because you didn't vote, you didn't get a chance to actually get to know your elected officials in your area. And that's very important. Also, during the gubernatorial election, you are voting for different laws that are going to affect your nation, your local community as well. For instance, we voted on the act to provide tuition assistance for community college for everyone in Maryland. That was voted on in a gubernatorial election. So those things are very important, and some people don't know about it. And I understand that it can be overwhelming, especially if you've never done it before. But I would suggest that you can get online. I believe Maryland.gov has a link to, you know, where you can find your local officials. Also, the Board of Elections has a website where you can find your local officials. And then you can just reach out to them via email, and you can be on their newsletter so that you can attend the town hall meetings, because that, to me, attending town hall meetings, actually having a conversation, you get to see that person, you get to see them interact with people, you get to actually hear it from the horse's mouth, what's going on, and you get to say what you feel needs to be addressed in the community. And that's better than getting an interpretation from a newspaper or an internet blog, because you're hearing it from the horse's mouth and you can decipher exactly what that person is saying and their intent behind it. And lastly, I would say also get involved in volunteering for the voting when election time comes. A lot of officials need volunteers to help pass out their flyers and to, you know, just speak on their behalf, because they can't be in every place at once.
What was the outcome of your election?
I lost, but no. So basically for the central committee in my district, there were five seats. There were five available seats. And the top five were chosen. I came in sixth. So I wasn't really upset, because the top five were, four of the top five were already on the committee. Three of them had already been elected on the committee, and two of the three that were already on the committee were actually elected officials. So not only did they hold a spot as an elected official, they also held a spot on the committee, which promotes the elected official. So that's important to note. The fourth person was actually a member at large. So she wasn't elected in, but she was already on the committee, and then she was actually elected in this time. And then the fifth person was already known in the community. So I think that to come in sixth, I was really proud of myself. Even though I lost, I didn't make the committee, I can still attend the committee meetings. I just don't have the responsibility that they do, but I can still be involved and be a member at large if I choose to. But I believe everything happens for a reason, because now I'm involved in a social actions ministry, and I still like to get involved in the community. And I really understand what it is to run, the responsibilities of it. It's very time consuming. It requires a lot of resources of your time, your money, you know, and just you being there traveling. So anyone that decides to run, understand it, it's a great commitment to do. You will lose a lot of time with your family members. You will lose a lot of time sleeping. You will lose money. But if you're passionate about it, and you feel that you can provide a positive impact to your community, absolutely do it. Absolutely do it.
And you're going to run again?
I haven't decided to run again. We'll see. The election for that position will come again in 4 years. So it'll be 2022 when it comes up again. So maybe then I'll decide. I'm definitely going to put myself in a position where if I do decide to run again in 2022, then I'll be more prepared. Yeah, I haven't made that decision yet, but I'll definitely make sure I'm in a prepared state if I do decide that's what I'm going to do.
Well, best of luck with all of your future endeavors.
Thank you.
We end each show with a segment called Parting Shots. Here I give my thoughts on something happening in the news, pop culture, or life in general that's piqued my interest. For this week's Parting Shots, I will talk about Aunt Becky with the good hair. Becky. If you're over the age of 35, you probably associate actress Lori Loughlin with her role as Aunt Becky on Full House, a popular Friday night sitcom on ABC's TGIF from 1987 through 1995. Recently, Loughlin has become infamous for her role in a national cheating scandal. The scandal involved Loughlin and 33 parents of college applicants who are accused of paying more than $25 million between 2011 and 2018 to fraudulently inflate their children's entrance exam scores and bribe college officials to get their kids into elite colleges and universities. Look, I'm not here to beat up Aunt Becky. She's a byproduct of a bigger problem in our country's history. That problem is the fact that for centuries, the wealthy have been allowed to think that they're entitled to buy their way into the best schools, the best neighborhoods, the best social clubs, and the best places of employment. Such entitlement has contributed to systemic social inequality and reckless nepotism at the highest levels of business and politics in this country. And that's our show for the week. Thanks again to our guest today. We do this every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Like us on Facebook and other forms of social media. A special shout out as always to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.
Listen to this or any past episode of UMES 30 by logging on to WESM913.org or through the NPR One app available for download on Google Play. UMES 30 is produced in the studios of 91.3 WESM, located on the campus of the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. The views and opinions expressed on UMES 30 are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore.